NFL schedule keeps on moving and the Crossing Routes podcast keeps on grooving. It is your boy Herms, joined as always by my good friend Tyler O. And today we are going to go over all the interesting things that took place in week 15 of the 2025 season. We have a lot to cover. A lot of injuries took place. A lot of weird games just happened. But we have to start with the big news. Normally, we get into the Thursday night football game right away, but Colts quarterback Daniel Jones tearing his Achilles is kind of a big deal. Not only because Daniel Jones is a reliable fantasy quarterback, but also because him being out for the rest of the year is going to have a dramatic impact on the rest of the pieces in this offense, you know, including guys like Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman and all sorts of stuff like that. So first, Tyler, well, first, how you doing? And then also, when it comes to this whole situation, what are your expectations for the Colts, especially if the rumors about them contacting 44-year-old grandfather Philip Rivers actually turned out to be true?
Yeah, this is such a rough thing, I think, for Colts fans to take in, right? The Colts had probably one of the hottest starts that I can remember in the first half of the season. Their offense was looking generational. And now the back half of the season, they're a joke. It's over, Herms. The Colts got nothing going on. And to make matters worse, they traded 2 first-round picks for Sauce Gardner, and they're not going to be able to do anything. Philip Rivers is not fixing this offense. It is over for the Colts. It is not happening. It is done. It is so sad after, you know, it's a team that I wouldn't say I root for the Colts, but I don't necessarily root against the Colts, right? Yeah. I was happy to see them do well. And for this just to kind of unfold like this, man, it's a real tough pill to swallow. So I don't really trust any. I mean, Jonathan Taylor gets a little bit of a downgrade. He's come back down to earth. I think we continue to roll him out as an RB1, but probably mid to low range RB1. I think Tyler Warren might be the only player or pass catcher that I would trust here, just because they seem to want him to use him all over the field. And just the way that the tight end position rocks. Like, what if he has kind of like a Taysom Hill role? Like, it's plausible. Like, we obviously are downgrading Tyler Warren, but like, I'm not playing Alec Pierce anymore. I wasn't really starting Pittman, and I'm definitely not starting Pittman anymore. Downs is out of the question. There's conversation about Riley Leonard. I think he could be like interesting in super flex leagues, but he's got a knee injury. So, man, this is just, we're down bad moving forward. Without Daniel Jones, the only player that we are considering from the Colts side is, for me at least, it's got to be Jonathan Taylor. What a fall from grace. Sad days for Indianapolis Colts fans.
Yeah, and I feel especially bad for the fantasy managers that were relying on Jones. And you know, at this point in the season, playoff-bound rosters probably already have a quarterback. They probably already have somebody that they've been starting. But if Daniel Jones was that person for you, I will just quickly throw out the 2 names of people that I would trust in the playoffs that are largely available on waivers. That would be the duo of Jacoby Brissett and Sam Darnold. I mean, like, that's kind of it. Like, at this point, those are really the only 2 guys that have gone out there, really showed that they can do it on a consistent basis. And if I had to pick between the 2, I'm going with Jacoby Brissett, just because he hasn't scored fewer than 18 point something points in 4-point per passing touchdown league since he took over in Arizona. No matter the opponent, they're just going to throw it as much as possible. So he is probably the best fill-in option. But otherwise, yeah, I'm with you on everything else. It really just lowers the ceiling of the entire thing. It's going to be a real bummer. But, you know, we do have better things and more happy things to get into. And we can start with some of the happy things by talking about the Thursday night football game between the Detroit Lions and the Dallas Cowboys, a game in which Amon-Ra St. Brown, despite the ankle injury and people not being sure if he was going to suit up, he went out there and he ended up having himself a pretty good game, tied for the team lead with 9 targets, 6 catches, 92 yards. It was a pretty classic performance from him. I'm pretty impressed by that. And before I hand it over to you, my only other note on the Lions is that in last week's usage report, I had made note that David Montgomery, and actually we even talked about it in last week's episode, David Montgomery not getting enough touches, blah, blah, blah. We were thinking of him as only a handcuff. And now it's the 2nd week in a row he's found the end zone and cracked double-digit PPR points. So sometimes that is the way the cookie crumbles. What other thoughts do you have from your favorite professional football team and how things went down for them in week 15?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the vast majority of Jared Goff's attempts went to Jameson Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Jahmyr Gibbs. This is how you win football games. You get the ball to your best players. You get the ball to the most talented. And it was just great to see. I mean, I think everything in this game needs to be taken with a little grain of salt because the Lions' pass offense is terrible and the Cowboys' pass defense is terrible. So it was really just a lot of points as expected. I believe this one had a 55.5 implied over total over under 55.5. And they blew that away, unsurprisingly. So no real notes from the Lions side. I think the only thing I would mention from the Cowboys side is CeeDee Lamb did have a pretty, what looked like a serious concussion when he kind of sat up there in the end zone. He was looking like it was rough. I would say it's very questionable. It did happen on Thursday, so it's very questionable. You know, I think Ryan Flournoy is obviously a name that you need to kind of consider. I believe he had about 9 catches, 115 yards, and a touchdown. It wasn't George Pickens. George Pickens mentally did not seem like he was in that game. He, you know, still can recover, I suppose. But for me, I look at the names here because of that CeeDee Lamb injury. It was good to see Ryan Flournoy step up. Keep in mind that the Cowboys do draw the Minnesota Vikings, which have a much better defense than the Lions. So something to consider, but it is a waiver wire name. Is Ryan Flournoy a top waiver wire name? No, but it is a name to consider in maybe some of those deeper leagues. Anything else heard?
No, I mean, I co-signed the Flournoy pick. This is the second time this year that CeeDee Lamb has been out of a contest and he has ended up with over 100 receiving yards. This is not something that came out of the blue. We've seen him kind of do it before. I definitely agree. If we get to the end of this week and it's looking like he's not going to pass through concussion protocol, him being CeeDee Lamb, obviously, then Ryan Flournoy, probably somebody that you should take a look at. I guess that takes us into all of the Sunday action, and we will start by getting into my favorite football team. See, it's nice that we get to take care of our teams at the beginning instead of the end of the episode like it has been so far this season. The Steelers somehow won against the Baltimore Ravens. It was hideous. I did not really enjoy watching it. And I gotta say, one of the things that I think is pretty impressive, considering the fact that since Lamar's come back, this Ravens offense has not been the same. It's not particularly potent through the air. The ground attack with Derrick Henry still gets things done, but like, of course, because it's Derrick Henry. But Zay Flowers has continued to be a consistent producer week over week. I think he should get a bit of a shout out. He's averaged at least 58 receiving yards in 5 of the 6 contests since Jackson came back in week 10 and has secured fewer than 4 catches in this span only twice. So that's pretty cool. That's really all I have to say about the Baltimore side of things. Actually, let me ask you this. How much do you believe in the whole Isaiah Likely thing?
I mean, Mark Andrews certainly ran more routes than Likely in this one. Got more targets and obviously more yards. They get the Bengals next week, so it'll be intriguing. So yeah, something to think about. But I think they're both viable as kind of low-end tight ends, like streamers in a sense. I don't think I'm like excited to be rolling out Andrews or Likely at this point, but there's definitely a piece of me that's like, you could do worse, and particularly against the Cincinnati Bengals. So just want to kind of piggyback and double down on your Zay Flowers thing. He did have a dud the other week, but like that's because he had like a 30-yard, 40-yard touchdown called back. I mean, he's been incredibly consistent. He hasn't been, you know, winning you weeks. He had a good week one, and it's been pretty slow. So it was good to see something kind of work there for him, man. Keaton Mitchell continues to be somebody on my radar. I think he might have caught a knee injury, something to look at, but still somebody, if he is indeed healthy, I think is the direct backup to Derrick Henry. And then to shift over to Steelers, man, I wanted to say this to you is, you know, Steelers won. Aaron Rodgers looked good. Do you think it was a coincidence that they targeted DK Metcalf 12 times and nobody else more than 4? I don't think so. I don't think so, Herms. I mean, it's nice to see them actually being like, hey, DK, this DK Metcalf guy, maybe he's a pretty good wide receiver. Let's give him some shots opposed to throwing the ball to Jonnu Smith and Darnell Washington all the time, man, or the running backs. So it was nice to see, a bit of a surprise, but DK has always been that guy where I'm like, he's disappointed a bit, but he is just a guy that to me, he's always in my flex, and you're going to get games like this, and it's nice.
It would have been cool if he would have had more than what is now two games of above 20 PPR points this season. But like, yeah, I mean, you've highlighted something, you know, pretty significant. Like, this is the best receiving weapon they have. And sometimes Arthur Smith remembers that. Sometimes he doesn't. He's probably the only option on this team that I feel confident in entering the fantasy playoffs. And I guess that is kind of the tricky thing we have to, you know, shift our brain around to do now. Obviously, when we do this show, we're talking about all sorts of players that, like, generally speaking, you can trust in lineups or whatever. But when it comes down to brass tacks and you are playing in a win or go home situation, the only Steelers I want to play are DK Metcalf and Jaylen Warren. And I know that does exclude Kenneth Gainwell, who again had six catches and just for some reason also sees a bunch of targets. But that is really about all the more comfortable I'm willing to go with it. Do you agree with that assessment and those two guys being the only ones that you really want to mess with?
I mean, Gainwell continues to be a primary kind of, I would say, under the radar handcuff because we've seen him go for 30 burger twice. But in terms of your starters, you nailed the terms.
Let's go over now to the Seattle Seahawks. Just, wow, they really took it to the Atlanta Falcons. This Atlanta offense is really kind of gross. I mean, unless Drake London comes back, which at this point, I don't know why he would. It's not, it doesn't make, they're not playing for anything. The only players on this team that I'm interested in are Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algier as the handcuff appeal, obviously. And I'm going to make the case for Kyle Pitts because it hasn't been perfect over the last several games with Kirk Cousins involved, but now in back-to-back weeks, he has gotten, what is it, over 80 receiving yards. He's seeing 18 targets in these last 2 weeks. He's by far the best option in this passing game, and especially if you're playing in tight end premium leagues. I mean, I've had Kyle Pitts rolled out there for the past couple of weeks, and I've been pretty happy with those takeaways. But yeah, I mean, that's really about it for Atlanta. I mean, is there anything else you want to cover there, or do you just want to go over to Seattle?
Kyle Pitts is playable when Drake London's out, and I think that's kind of the play here, considering the position. But we can move over to the other side of the ball. You got something to kick us off?
Talk about things that made me look bad from last week's usage report. I all but buried Rashid Shaheed talking about the fact that he just hadn't been out there doing a whole lot. And now all of a sudden they figure him into the offense a lot more. 4 for 67 was kind of nice. I don't really know that I'm super enthusiastic about it for playoff purposes, but you know, just egg on my face back to back between Montgomery and Shaheed. That was kind of amusing. And then I guess my only other this backfield, I mean, do we care about either Kenneth Walker or Zach Charbonnet at this point?
I'm done, dude. I'm done. I was going to come on here and apologize because I've touted Walker multiple times in the preseason, and I actually touted him multiple times during the season telling people to start him. And I'm not just telling people to start him. I start him too, right? I'm not just telling people to start a player without starting him. So it sucks. It's not happening. It's just not happening. Bench depth until one of them gets injured. Sorry, folks, the Kenneth Walker takes, starts, we're wrong. We're moving on. We're moving on. Am I dropping him? No. But, man, we're not starting him anymore. Not doing it.
There's no point. I also feel very bad. I would also like to apologize to listeners. We are both very culpable for this. But, you know, kind of like I was saying earlier, like if you need to stream quarterback, Darnold's fine. But otherwise, it's basically just Jackson, Smith, and Jigba. There's not a ton of fantasy stuff to get into with this game. I think this next one we have actually does have some, you know, potentially intriguing and actionable takeaways. The Buffalo Bills kind of stole it away from the Cincinnati Bengals at the end of that game on Sunday. It was very weird to see Joe Burrow just have those two interceptions back to back in that very short window of time. Very tough scene as far as that goes, but I do really want your opinion. This is because he plays tight end.
Yes.
Tight end has very few options as it is, but Mike Gesicki has now had a couple games since coming back from his pectoral injury that kept him on injured reserve for the better chunk of the season now. And I think they do have a tendency to put Noah Fant in there, to put in Tanner Hudson in there. It's a weird tight end rotation that Cincinnati has. But beyond T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, and Chase Brown, Do you think Mike Gesicki is somebody that belongs in lineups?
If you're hurting, yeah, sure. I think I would rather go with like Mark Andrews or even Isaiah Likely next week than Gesicki. It is still a rotation there, so it doesn't feel necessarily good. I'd have to see how my ranks turn out this week. I mean, there's a chance he falls himself in the top 15, but I don't have a ton of excitement for him. I mean, we'll see. It looks like T. Higgins has got another concussion, it seems like, or he had a concussion, then he came back, and then after the game, he's like, oh, he might have a concussion. Well, yeah, that's kind of how that works. Everyone saw it. but I think he's definitely usable, right? I definitely want to be careful and like being like, oh, he's a must sit or must start. Like, I haven't ran anything for this week, and I feel like Higgins is probably going to be out, but we got to see how that one goes. But he's on the radar. Gesicki is on the radar. We'll put it that way.
Well, definitely a good way to looking at it. And also, I would like to apologize personally to Joe Burrow. I left his name out. You can also start Joe Burrow in your fantasy lineup stuff.
We forgot he was back. The guy's back.
Yeah, happens to the best of us. But on the other side of the ball, you know, actually, speaking of tight ends, the Buffalo duo of Dawson Knox and Dalton Kincaid are the only pass catchers that did basically anything. At this point, I'm completely done with any wide receiver on this team. Of course, you're starting Josh Allen because he is the absolute dude. Of course, you're starting James Cook because he's the absolute dude. But where are we at, even with Kincaid? I mean, like, it was cool. He found the end zone. He ended up with, you know, 4 catches, 41 yards. It's nothing terrible, but like, it's the same argument we've been having with him all year. It's like, he's a part-time player. Can we do this? Can we do that? Do we even feel confident with him in a playoff lineup at this point?
I think I do. I really think I do. Kincaid's routes, the routes that he's running came up a little bit. He's been getting it done on not a lot all season long. And just considering how we're like, having these conversations like, I am done with the wide receivers on the Bills, which I agree with. Even 50% of snaps with Kincaid is good enough for me at the position. We talked about Andrews. We talked about Likely. We talked about Gesicki. I would much like rather have Dalton Kincaid than those names there. So, you know what? I am trusting Dalton Kincaid as a kind of low-end tight end one, and I'm fairly comfortable with him going forward, even if he's only going to be a part-time player. It is, like you said, it's Josh Allen. You don't necessarily need to be out there for getting the full amount of snaps that you look for in a typical tight end. When you have a quarterback like Josh Allen and arguably one of the worst wide receiver rooms in the NFL, you don't need a ton of snaps and you don't need a ton of routes to get it done. So I'm here for Dalton Kincaid.
Hell yeah. Any final thoughts on that, or do you want to move into conversation about another tight end?
We can move on.
Yeah, dude, the tight end position is actually bringing us a lot of interesting names coming off of week 15. And look, for some reason, I cannot explain why, but Harold Fannin Jr. is only rostered in 54.8% of ESPN leagues and 39% of Yahoo leagues. At least those were the numbers last night when I was doing the research and checking out all this stuff. It's kind of crazy because, dude, 11 targets, 8 catches, a touchdown, but most importantly, 114 receiving yards. Before we get into anything else that happened with the Browns or the Titans, I do want to share this fun fact that I researched for the usage report, but you guys are going to hear it now because people who listen to the Crossing Routes podcast deserve fun facts. Because Harold Fannin Jr. recorded over 100 receiving yards on Sunday, that means he is now the third rookie tight end to do so in the 2025 season. That kind of got me thinking, when was the last time three rookie tight ends went for over 100 yards in the same season? That has only ever happened one other time in the Super Bowl era, and that was all the way back in 1987 when three dudes who I don't think I've ever heard of, Tampa Bay Buccaneers tight end Steve Holloway, former Washington Commanders tight end Craig McEwen, and St. Louis Cardinals tight end Robert Awaltz all reached over 100 receiving yards as rookie tight ends in 1987. So Harold Fannin was able to contribute to creating rookie tight end history on Sunday. That is my big fact that I have for this game and my big plea for everybody to just pick him up off the waiver wire, because like I said, it's unbelievable that he is that broadly available. Do you have any other thoughts from Cleveland, especially the whole thing that we haven't mentioned yet? Shedeur Sanders looked low-key kind of not bad.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Shedeur Sanders a lot in the offseason where we're like, you know, he's got a good floor, right? Kind of like a Geno Smith. Like, he's got a good floor. And then we definitely reeled back on that because the NFL told us we were wrong. But I think what you and I saw on tape in college showed up against the Titans. He looked serviceable. I think he maybe, dare I say, he looked better than serviceable. So I think he's viable in super flex 2QB leagues, especially I believe they got the Bears next, and their defense sucks. So, you know, I found myself rooting for the guy because I felt everyone was rooting against him. So I'm happy to see it, right? I mean, as Browns fans, you got to be kind of happy that, hey, this guy we drafted on day three looks pretty damn good. So good for him. I have nothing else I really want to. I can shift over to the Titans because there's really nothing there. Tony Pollard. I but God. So let me just break this down for you for a second. Listeners, not you, Herms, as you know, the Browns have like the toughest run defense in the NFL. Like, honestly, like you don't really start your running backs against the Browns.
No,
it is not something you do because they are so stout and so strong that like Pollard, who should have already been on waivers because there's no touchdown equity or upside in a Spears Pollard split on one of the worst offenses in the NFL. Pollard was so far off my radar in this game. And then he goes out and puts up like just one of the craziest games I've ever seen. I guess my thing here is just don't overreact to Tony Pollard. It's not happening again, folks. That is the one thing I want to say.
Yeah, like very cool. If I remember correctly, I think I remember reading somewhere that it was this career high in rushing yards too, which like of all times to do that, why would you wait to do that now, Tony Pollard? But yeah, otherwise, I mean, good for him, but that's about all I can really say. Also, I mean, it's pretty cool to see Chimere Dike end up scoring another touchdown. You know, one of those names that we kind of like for dynasty purposes, I suppose. But yeah, that's it for the Titans. There's nothing else we really need to get into there. So let's get into, wow. Okay, I forgot this was the next game up. Oh, okay. All right. My local Washington Commanders. They kind of played football.
Oh, God, dude. I mean, first of all, it's like, I was floored when I figured out and heard that they were starting Jaden Daniels. Do we remember what his elbow looked like? What, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, was it? I don't care. It was not even a month ago. And then they rolled him out when they have nothing to play for, man. Irresponsible. I don't even know. I know you might have had a plan to start this somewhere, but like, I really had to just cut you off and be like, dude, this is irresponsible of the Commanders to do this to him. And look, he's re-aggravated it. And they're out of contention. What are they doing, man? What are they? I thought they got the bad ownership out of town, and then they're doing this stuff. What's going on here, Herms? Help me out.
I don't know, but I distinctly remember there was another highly drafted quarterback they had not too long ago, maybe a little over a decade ago, who had a pretty serious injury, but the coaching staff decided to put him out there anyway, and that didn't really go well for him, so why on earth would that go well for Jaden Daniels? This franchise loves repeating their mistakes for some reason. Yeah, it's bizarre. I completely agree. And we're now seeing, as a result of all of this, this entire offense is pointless. I don't think it is a stretch. Even like, I've tried to make the argument for Chris Rodriguez as like a flex desperation type option. But at this point that we are at now, especially with Zach Ertz tearing his ACL in that game, his knee like exploded. That was one of the most dreadful things that I've seen in a while. There is nobody on this team that I want to start. I think that for the rest of the fantasy football season, you are safe with zero Washington Commanders being in your lineup, because there's no point. There's absolutely no point. And on the Vikings side of things, like, I don't know, McCarthy, but it was against the Commanders, you know, like it was.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's you got to take it with a grain of salt. So I think Mariota, he's not hurt too, right? I think he's alive. I think Mariota is like, might be usable in some cases. Okay. I'm not out on Mariota. I think he's streamable, but like it's tough because they're finishing the season here with the I think the Giants, the Eagles, and the Commanders, right? So it's not bad. It's not good. But I think generally, I think you're speaking the truth, man. If you're really looking at your roster, and I'm like, this is the roster that's winning me a championship, that roster does not have any Commanders on it. So that's just a fair statement. I guess to play the devil's advocate, I was like, yeah, Mariota's been okay as a streamer, which maybe in two QB leagues he might be. But dude, it's grim, man. It's grim. We, you know, to go to the Viking side, I just to double down on what you said. I mean, JJ McCarthy played solid. He did what he was supposed to do. But again, it's the Commanders. They got one of the worst defenses out there. Even when he was able to, quote unquote, do it, Justin Jefferson missing. What are we? I just don't understand how, like, you know, like JJ McCarthy, oh, like people are happy about it. The JJ McCarthy truthers came back out of the woodwork with this one. They just really ignored that it was a shell of a football team with one of the worst defenses. But we don't want to address the fact that he just didn't get arguably, you know, I think without arguing, a top two wide receiver in the NFL involved whatsoever. So I know they won, blah, 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 but it's not like JJ McCarthy is doing us fantasy managers. I guess as a Vikings fan, yes, be a little excited. Find your little wins in life. But as fantasy managers, how do you feel good about this? You don't, man.
No, there's nothing really to say about this Vikings team for fantasy purposes because all of the things that you said being true. So we can now, let's just pivot over into one more game. We're going to get into this one, then we're going to take our commercial break, but this one should be pretty quick work. The Miami Dolphins, they beat the New York Jets, who lost Tyrod Taylor early in the game. They had to throw out Brady Cook, who I vaguely remember. I think he was a quarterback at Missouri in college. Like, I don't know. He was decent, but like nobody that we really need to pay that close attention to. I don't think we can play anybody on the Jets now. It's like I don't see that, especially with like Breece Hall. This was supposed to actually be a pretty decent matchup. I mean, the Dolphins run defense hasn't been as soft as it was maybe slightly earlier in the year, but it's been a matchup that running backs have done well in the past. But like when you're just down that bad at quarterback, the entire offense suffers. And if Breece Hall's not producing anything, then I don't really care. Like Mechie and Adonai Mitchell were fun stories. It was all predicated on Tyrod Taylor being the quarterback, that whole thing. I don't see it. I don't see it for the Jets. And the only other thing I really have to say from this game is that Mike McDaniel has said that Devin Achane probably could have gotten back out there. He left the game with I think it was also a groin injury in the second quarter. Like he could have played if it was actually a game of consequence. He will probably be on track to play next Monday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I'm not really stressing about telling people to go pick up Jalen Wright or Ollie Gordon. Do you think people should go do that anyway, Tyler? And if they have to pick between the two, are you leaning more toward Wright or Gordon?
Honestly, I think I'm leaning more towards Jalen Wright. I was pretty hyped about him this offseason. Obviously, didn't work out, but I think he showed why there was excitement for him in the 2024 season and why we had excitement for Jalen Wright going into the season. He looks great, and I think I kind of know what Ollie Gordon is, and it's not as fun or electric. I do think Jalen Wright's got a little more juice to him, so I would be leaning towards Jalen Wright's, but I would agree with you that I do feel like Achane is probably going to be suiting up because the Dolphins are still in it. The Dolphins are still in it, and they're going to keep playing football. It sucks to see Tyrod go down. It really hurts this whole team. Breece Hall has been getting such a high snap rate, and it just doesn't matter. So I will say maybe Justin Fields comes back. I don't know. Apparently he's got a knee injury. I don't really know exactly what's going on there. I don't know if that's a soft inactive, as I think they're calling it. But I do think if someone else besides Brady Cook is out there, Breece Hall is still flexible, in my opinion. Just considering how good he is and how many snaps he'll be getting. But it's a sad story and a sad turn of events for the Jets, who had some promise to start the season.
Definitely disappointing, as was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' loss to the New Orleans Saints. But we won't get into that right now. We will first get into our break, and then on the other side, get into all of that madness. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast. Please do not go anywhere.
Yo, what's shaking my bacon? It's your friend C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes Podcast here to let you know that our partners at DraftKings Pick 6 have a deal that you don't want to miss. New DraftKings customers? This one's for you. When you play $5 or more on your first paid Pick 6 entry, you'll get $50 in Pick 6 credits. That's right. Play $5, get 50 in Pick 6 credits to lock in your picks and take your shot at big wins. Just use our promo code FTN to sign up and start playing. If you've been thinking about trying Pick 6, now's the perfect time to get in. Just use our code FTN to sign up, and all new DraftKings customers can play $5 and get $50 in Pick 6 credits. Let's build some lineups. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org in Connecticut. Must be 18 plus. Age and eligibility restrictions vary by jurisdiction. Pick 6 not available everywhere, including New York and Ontario. Void where prohibited. One per new customer. Bonus awarded as non-withdrawable Pick 6 credits that expire in 14 days. Ends December 2nd, 2025 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Alrighty, folks. Welcome back to the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. Actually, I don't think I said that at the beginning. I always do the fun little fuel by fantasy thing. But, you know, hey, I got it in there at some point, and now we can officially move on into the task at hand, which was the Saints beating the Buccaneers. I thought that was kind of interesting. Devin Neal had a really good game. One of the things that I noted in the usage report that I was excited about for this matchup was that the Bucs actually surrendered a lot of receiving yards to opposing running backs this season. That didn't really manifest in this one, but it didn't matter because Devin Neal got it done on the ground. I think we can continue to trust him. That was kind of neat, but I don't know. Any thoughts on the Saints in this one before we turn it over to the Bucs? Because like the bulk of the conversation here, I think, is going to have to be on Tampa Bay, right?
For the most part. I mean, Devin Neal, we talked about him being an RB2 just out of volume and the fact that he catches the ball. That feels good. I mean, I guess Tyler Shuck rushing for 2 scores and 50 yards was something. I didn't know he had that in him. I'm pretty sure the Bucs defense was not ready for that either. But something to note that he has a little bit of mobility, which is always good for fantasy. Don't really have too much else there to talk about. Like, obviously, like, you know, Olave's fine in your roster. And Juwan Johnson obviously is going to have some days when he's usable. But we can shift into the Bucs. Herms, where are we starting?
I mean, I don't know. I think we could start with the backfield or we could start with the receiving core. But I think the thing that really has the most tangible fantasy impact is what's happening with these pass catchers and the fact that Amika Igbuka has kind of just gone dormant over the past several weeks. It just hasn't gone super well for him. He's seen 34 targets in the past month, but he's only caught 14 of those for a combined 129 yards. He hasn't hit double-digit PPR points since week 10 against the Patriots. I haven't gotten super far into the data yet. Everybody will have an opportunity to see my thoughts on that when the usage report drops on ftnfantasy.com on Wednesdays. But that's kind of concerning to me. But at least Chris Godwin is kind of on the come up. He's hit back-to-back games of 55 plus receiving yards and 5 targets. Like, I don't know, man. That's kind of cool, I guess. But ah, geez, do we want to start any pass catchers on the Bucs with the understanding that I think I saw a report that there is a possibility Mike Evans returns for Thursday night football against the Falcons this week. I think that's who they're playing. Like, if Evans comes back, maybe, but like, do you want to trust any Tampa Bay receiver?
I mean, I would probably still roll Evans if he's healthy and Igbuka out. I'm not going to lie. They got the Falcons, the Panthers, the Dolphins. It's a pretty easy schedule to finish the year. Baker Mayfield hasn't been playing well. I think these people are actually like, I actually think like Igbuka was just hyper efficient to start the year and like Baker was on fire and now Baker's kind of playing poor and that's affecting Igbuka. We know Baker has the ability to kind of turn that around. We got some softer matchups coming up. Not to say this was a hard one, but actually, you know what? The Saints defense needs to get a little more respect. They're not as bad as we talk about the Saints being, right? So what I'm saying here is I think this is not an Igbuka issue as much as I think it's just A, in terms of efficiency, regression to the mean, he was hyper efficient, and then B, Baker just playing poor. I don't think they're bad plays. Like, we're not like rushing to get Igbuka as a top 10 dynasty wide receiver as our number one wide receiver. No, but who else are we, you know, if you have Igbuka, I'd really challenge yourself. Like, I have a team with Igbuka. If I bench Igbuka, I'm playing like Xavier Worthy. If I bench Igbuka, I'm playing, you know, Keenan Allen. Like, I don't have those kind of guys. Like, you know, Brian Thomas is another name, you know, so like, I don't have those kind of guys to just have that luxury to sit Igbuka. Like, yeah, if you have a bunch of top 15, top 20 dudes, yeah, sit Igbuka. But, you know, I'm not going to be able to probably rank Igbuka outside my top 30. So, like, for most people, that's going to be a start. So I understand the concerns. I understand the disappointment from what we saw at the beginning of the season. But you also need to stay the course. And I'm not ready to put Igbuka on my bench, Herms. And I would say that's where I'm at.
Yeah, definitely fair to have some concerns, but not so concerned that we need to overreact. I think the same can be said for the backfield. It was kind of cool that Rashad White got out there for people that have to play Rashad White for whatever reason. It's not ideal for Bucky Irving managers, but like, look, dude, he still got 15 carries in the game. He still had a couple catches for a touchdown. He still had a good fantasy day. I'm not really stressing too hard about that. I think anybody who would be is a little bit misguided. So I think that kind of covers that game. And that take. Okay, so this one finally takes us back into the Colts. So we already had our conversation about the Colts at the beginning of the show. We don't really need to touch too much more on that. But the Jacksonville side of things, I think, is where stuff gets a little bit interesting in terms of the fact that, all right, like, Brenton Strange didn't come through. I know we've been hyping this up a lot, but he still got 6 targets. So anybody, like, just, I'm still rolling with Brenton Strange. I have not given up on that.
Stay the course.
But, man, Jacoby Myers is really impressive. I mean, obviously, you'd like to see him catch more than 4 passes on 10 targets, but like, he is just a PPR point scoring machine ever since he joined this team.
Always has been, though.
Yeah, dude, like, I feel super confident in him. But, you know, you alluded to it in our last, you know, section there. I think Jacoby Myers is the only one that I'm confidently starting. But what is your confidence level in Brian Thomas Jr.? Because, like, he hasn't caught a ton of his targets that have come his way, but he's, over the past 3 games at least, gone over 50 receiving yards. He's done something. There's a little bit of life there. Do you feel confident in that? Do you think this is something that people can trust enough, at least as a flex?
Yeah, I do. Trevor Lawrence, I think he's playing some pretty good football. That's where I'm at with him. I think the Jags are playing good football. I think Trevor Lawrence is playing good football. I do think Brian Thomas is a flex. You know, solid outings. Maybe he's more of a complimental piece, and we were just really gassing things up too far, and I think that's fine to admit. But if Trevor Lawrence is playing better, I think the passing game could work, and it could work for Brian Thomas Jr. So I think Parker Washington is droppable. We know that Hunter is not coming back. They continue to run on the, you know, lean on the run game. You know, Travis Etienne, no matter what Bashaill Tuten does, they always find a way to get the ball back to Etienne. Yeah, it's similar, maybe not as extreme as Igbuka, but it's like, hey, like, both with Thomas and both with Igbuka, we've said words like, these are top 10 wide receivers in the NFL. And at this point in time in the season, we're like, we were wrong. It's just about tempering our expectations. And yeah, I think Brian Thomas Jr. is a fine flex. I've no problem tossing him in the flex. Because it's like, what do you do? Guys who are continually ranked in the 30s are guys like Khalil Shakir. Like, what are we doing here? Yeah, you could sit here and listen to this right now and probably find more consistency out of Khalil Shakir than you could Brian Thomas Jr., sure. But I think for me, it's like, well, we know he's a better player. So I'm pretty confident, at least plugging him in, you know, is that third wide receiver slot or a flex slot with Brian Thomas Jr. Again, it's about setting your expectations and not just really being like, hey, he's not as good as we thought, but he's still a start, especially with Trevor Lawrence playing this well.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I'm with you there. Sometimes you just got to roll with who you got, and he is a very talented football player, if nothing else. But let's take that whole theme of setting expectations and apply it now to the Las Vegas Raiders, who lost to the Denver Broncos, but also may have lost Geno Smith to a right shoulder injury. I have not seen any updates on that since. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, there are some more updates on this. But Tyler, I want you to fill in the blank. If Kenny Pickett is the starting quarterback for the Las Vegas Raiders, the players that I am comfortable starting for this team are blank.
I mean, does Brock Bowers count? Because that's it. I guess, like, to talk about it, Jack Besh looks like he's getting some opportunity. Started playing more in 2 wide receiver sets. Had, like, an okay game. Not comfortable with it. I'm starting GNT because I have to, because of volume, and then Bowers is the only one. I mean, frankly, I probably think they're Aiden O'Connell's still on the Raiders, right? I'm pretty, he was just hurt most of the season. I think he's better than Pickett, dude. I'm not going to lie.
True.
I think he's better than Pickett. So that's kind of where I would stand on things. It doesn't change anything for fantasy. It's GNT. It's Bowers. Even with Pickett or with Geno. So, but I think I'd rather see Aiden O'Connell over Pickett going forward here, but not a lot of notes from the Raiders side of the ball.
I guess I can, the Broncos. Yes. The other team in the game. That's what we're talking about, Herms, for the Broncos side. RJ Harvey got it done. That was pretty cool. It's nice that they're finally giving him a larger concentration of the backfield work and making things smaller for Jaleel McLaughlin and them. But that's really about all I have to discuss there. How are you feeling about this Broncos offense for fantasy purposes?
I mean, I think it's fine when they don't play very good teams. I think this is a very average offense. Very average offense. If you play, you know, the Raiders are a pretty average defense, so I think they play decent. I just think this Broncos offense really hasn't found its identity. We haven't gotten the stability we need out of Bo Nix. I mean, RJ Harvey did well, but, like, keep in mind that he's really only getting this opportunity because J.K. Dobbins got hurt. He's doing it, so I can't take that away from him. Happy for or Harvey, if you held on to him and you drafted him high, it might just pay off for you down the stretch when it matters the most. So props to you on that one. The pass catchers continue to be a nightmare, in my opinion. Troy Franklin, who we were sure was the second, like, fell, I believe, to fifth in snaps. Mims is doing it again. Bryant becomes interesting. So while the Broncos are out there trying to figure out what the hell they're doing with their wide receivers, we're pretty much just avoiding them all. I think Sutton is usable sometimes, depending on your team, but really, I'm not trying to guess who the Broncos are going to be trotting out as their second wide receiver in an offense led by Bo Nix the way they're all playing right now. They're better off like, hey, Bo Nix, you start him, hope he does some rushing stuff, right? You did in this game, rush for a touchdown. You know, obviously Harvey's good too, but I'm not messing with anybody else, man. I just don't want to guess. I don't want to try to figure it out. There's really nothing there. If you're like holding a Broncos wide receiver on your bench beside Sutton, just drop him. What are we doing here? Just get rid of him and let's move along.
Yeah, it's just not much of a point for sure. And also, I saw a quote floating out there that Sean Payton was saying something about, like, oh, we got to get Marvin Mims more touches. For who? Why? For what purpose? Who would that? That doesn't help anyone. I swear if that actually happens, it's just only going to get more and more irritating. But we can go over now to the NFC North, where the Green Bay Packers toppled the Chicago Bears. I thought that was actually pretty cool. Kind of nice to see Jaden Reed come back into the fold. He didn't do a whole heck of a lot, but ended up with 50 scrimmage yards if we include his, you know, a couple of carries that went for 22. That was kind of neat. But other than that, I mean, it's Josh Jacobs, Christian Watson. I think Jordan Love is startable in, you know, a decent chunk of matchups. There's nothing really too much to the Green Bay Packers offense. But the thing I want to highlight from this game is probably my number one receiver target from the waiver wire. And I don't know what it is. A lot of my waiver guys are actually coming in the later part of these games. So we'll get into a lot of the waiver names at the end of this episode, folks. Luther Burden ending up being the lead pass catcher. It kind of seems like Roma Dunze is going to be out with whatever foot issue for quite some time, possibly, you know, next week, maybe even the week after that. So as long as there's a distinct possibility that Luther Burden is the top receiver for the Chicago Bears, I do want him on my rosters. Only 60%, 16% rostered on ESPN and 17 on Yahoo. He's broadly available. You can definitely go pick up Burden. Are you feeling confident with that on the same level that I am?
Yeah, I'm good with it. Like the Packers are a good defense. So you got to give the Bears props for what they're able to do against it. You're really not surprised with kind of like how a lot of this rolled out, but Packers got a good defense, man. And hats off for the Bears for playing football against them. You know, I think the Luther Burden's definitely a top ad. I mean, I think he's been on the waiver wire list for a while now. So, you know, I know a lot of our leagues, he's probably gone, but definitely a name that is there. But I think Watson, more interestingly, is like when Tucker Kraft went down, I think the conversation was like, we can't trust anybody. All these wide receivers are going to kind of mold into like this like group or room of wide receivers where no one's going to rise above. We were wrong. I mean, I was wrong. I should say I definitely said that. Watson is good. I think Watson is something that someone we can trust every single week. I think the thing that we do have to keep in mind, though, is the Packers do get the Broncos defense next week. So that's going to be a tough one. But to me, we'll see the real Jordan Love. Everyone's been talking about how hot Jordan Love has been. No, in the last week, he's only been usable in like 25% of his games. He does it against the Bears as expected. If Love can continue to put up like 250 and three touchdowns or 300 and two touchdowns against the Denver Broncos, time to start talking about Love being like a serious fantasy asset. But right now, he's just kind of getting it done against weaker defenses, and that makes you a streamer. So don't have a ton else to say there. Good to see Jaden Reed back on the field, getting some carries, getting some targets like he always does. Maybe he'll be worth kind of monitoring as we go forward.
Yeah, I think if you really need the help, I also have Jaden Reed on the list of waiver targets. I'm not super confident in it, but, you know, he's versatile, and it's not like the types of targets he's competing for are the ones that are going to Christian Watson necessarily anyway, so there is a little bit of leeway there that I think is interesting. I also think Colston Loveland, if you need a tight end, that's another name that we can toss out there, but that's about all we really have to get into for that one. And then, all right, my top running back, my top two running backs actually come to us from the Arizona Cardinals and Los Angeles Rams game. We'll start first with the Rams, and Blake Corum has now outgained Kyren Williams in rushing yards in back-to-back games. And it's actually only the third time in his career that he's done that. He did it randomly at the beginning of last year, but it was a game where like neither of them did particularly well. But like Corum is just super efficient on the opportunities that he gets. We have both, mostly you, but we both have advocated for him as one of those like handcuff guys. Like if he wasn't on your bench already, then I don't know what you were doing. But this is going to be the last opportunity you have to get Blake Corum onto your team. I think it's very important that folks go after that. But other than that, it's the usual suspects from the Rams. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think the most interesting thing about this game is they ran into what we call 13 personnel. That's what the Rams were doing. It's where you have one wide receiver, one running back, and three tight ends. And they were basically like, we're going to run this pretty much the entire game. This is why we didn't get to see a lot of Davante Adams, because that's why we saw a lot of Puka Nacua, because that was what they were deciding to just have three tight ends. Typically, this is a more run-heavy formation. So I'm not surprised that we saw so much out of Blake Corum and Kyren Williams. I will still continue to rank Kyren Williams ahead of Blake Corum, okay?
Yeah.
There was a snippet or a soundbite about how they want to rest Kyren Williams a little bit for the playoffs. While that has no bearing on fantasy football, I still believe Kyren Williams to be the more trusted and better running back. And in games when they're blowing teams out, of course. Why would you not put your... This is what more teams should be doing when you have a starter that you know... Is Kyren a stud starter? Let's call him a stud starter. When you have a stud starter and your playoffs are all but locked and the game's locked up, yeah, give your second running back some run like this. Like, do that a lot. Like, don't continue to trot out your starters and ask for an injury. So I'm glad they were able to do this. A little bit more to talk about there from the Rams side than usual. We can shift over to the Cardinals. I'm happy just to take it. I mean, Michael Wilson, man.
Yo.
Dude, insanity. I can't credit it because I don't remember who I saw it, but somebody like posted on Twitter about like Rashad Perriman did this with Tampa Bay a few years back, where he just was absolutely killing it for like five weeks. That's such a good example of something like that happening, because it's just ridiculous what he's doing with Brissett. I mean, the Cardinals are so bad that they're always in these pass heavy scripts, and Michael Wilson is just like getting it done. So good for him. Not the best game out at Trey McBride, but we know there's better days ahead. The running backs are pretty much all dead there on the Arizona side. Anything left to note here, Herms?
The running backs are somewhat dead, but the reason that I actually have Bam Knight as my top waiver running back this week.
I like it.
Adam Schefter tweeted on Sunday that, I think it was Sunday, or it was either like that or Saturday, but something very, very recently, Trey Benson's 21-day practice window is coming really close to closing. And if they don't activate him off of injured reserve, he's not eligible to return for the remainder of the 2025 season. And I get the impression that it is heavily trending in that direction. So I think we finally, after weeks of speculating when this dude's finally going to come back, we finally have an answer. And if that ends up being the case, I do think Bam Knight
I mean, obviously they didn't, neither of them did well against the Rams, but you know, how many, they're a very good defense. I didn't expect them to do particularly well anyway, but Bam Knight has been the guy who's led the backfield. If this ends up being a Benson-less offense, Knight is somebody that I think that you can trust, but I'm not doing this. I'm not really saying this out of any sort of level of enthusiasm, but I would much rather have him than Chris Rodriguez. I would much rather have him than some of these other running backs that are on dead teams, because at least the Cardinals do something. So like, that's kind of my thought there, but.
Good to roll forward, Herms. Love that piece.
All right, so we got the Texans and the Chiefs. All right, honest to God, my only takeaway from this game is I have a new pet theory that the NFL has finally, league-wide, officially caught up to Andy Reid. I don't know. This offense just doesn't work anymore. They've been following the same team formula throughout the entirety of the Patrick Mahomes era. I think something has to give, because this performance was not particularly great. I am not thrilled with what I got out of Rashee Rice. I really needed him to step up in some areas on certain teams of mine, but that whole thing was kind of gross. Do you have anything positive to say about the Chiefs?
You know, I think Kelsey's continued to be trustable, Hunt in a pinch, and then Rashee Rice will have much better days. The Texans, in my opinion, are arguably the best defense in the NFL right now overall. So you got to consider that. They've been that team where, you know, I've stashed them on teams where I had buys or like didn't need to play this week. I mean, they ended up being fine. But for me, I think the Texans are the best defense right now. So they're a team that I've been targeting pretty aggressively to get on my defense special team. So I don't have anything else from the Chiefs. There'll be better days ahead for those main guys that we talked about. Even Mahomes will be fine. And then the Texans side, I think Nick Chubb had a little bit of an injury there. Obviously more time for Woody Marks. Woody Marks finally was able to do something in this one. Continues to kind of be that, like, you know, low end RB2, but certainly could do worse kind of player. And then it's really just Nico for me. I mean, Jaden Higgins probably deserves to be on your roster, but I'm not starting him.
Neither am I. I have Higgins noted as a waiver target just because he continues to see looks on a consistent basis. But I mean, that's about it. I'm very much in line with you saying on the roster, yes, in your lineup, not necessarily, but I guess that brings us to the end of the show. So I guess the only other thing I have to say is the other tight end I had listed was Theo Johnson, but the Giants didn't play, so we didn't talk about them. Other than that, Tyler, always good to talk with you. Always good to break things down on the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. Be sure to check out all of our written work and all the other cool stuff that comes out on ftnfantasy.com. If you need some waiver wire help and you're not, you know, you want a few more names than the ones that we provided in this one, the waiver wire tool is super great. We will talk to you all again next week to cover the first round of the fantasy football playoffs. Best of luck to everybody. Until next time, adios.